Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football exclusive.
Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Daniel Moguion, and this is our first edition in a series of 32 on the clock, brought to you by NFLDraftBible.com, where we break down the top 32, the 32 teams in the NFL as they prepare for the NFL draft. Each show will feature a top writer and a player. We're going to break down team needs, key free agents, and a plan of attack for the 2011 draft. Today, our special guest will be Darren Gant of the Charlotte Observer, who's going to come on and talk some Carolina Panthers football. But while I have your attention, folks, I want to remind everybody, take a moment to tell you that the biggest celebration since the New Year's going over here at the NFLDraftBible.com is coming on. We are launching, folks. We are relaunching. That's right. Yes, it's better late than never, but we are going to be fully operational with a brand new look, updated rankings, projections, scouting reports in time for the NFL Scouting Combine. That's in time for next Thursday. NFLDraftBible.com is where college football and the NFL collide. So stay tuned to NFLDraftBible.com for upcoming relaunch and new membership details. If you have any questions, if you have a player recommendation, you want to tell us how much you love us or how much we don't know what we're talking about, drop us a line, media@NFLDraftBible.com. That's media@NFLDraftBible.com. I also want to remind everybody to listen to the NFL Draft Digest Weekly Show, which I just taped, and special guest Keith Williams out of Nebraska we had on today, as well as our player diaries that we have up on our website, Mike Muhammad and Steve Schilling. But right now, let's get into the Carolina Panthers. They are on the clock. It's official. Number one overall pick, Carolina Panthers. Let's take a look at that five-year plan and how kind of they got here. They were 2-14 last year, finished fourth in the AFC South. In the last 5 years, they had a record of 37-43, with their last playoff appearance coming in 2008. Last playoff victory came in 2005 when they beat the Chicago Bears 29-21 to get to the NFC Championship game. Now, they actually had a pretty decent draft in 2010. Maybe not everybody loved that Jimmy Clausen pick, but afterwards they made some interesting picks and some solid picks, including Brandon LaFell, who had a pretty good year as a rookie receiver out of LSU. While the Armonte Edwards experiment didn't kind of work out and panned out to look like the reach that many of us thought it was when it was made in the third round, but they did get a steal. They kind of made up for it by grabbing David Geddes out of Baylor in the sixth round with the 198th overall pick. Another solid pick seemed to be Greg Hardy, so a very strong sixth round for them. Tony Pike gets an incomplete grade for his performance, didn't really play much, but they also grabbed Jordan Pugh out of Texas A&M, a corner who's showed the ability to play some safeties, was a pretty good, reliable return man for the Panthers. So in grabbing a potential pass rusher, Greg Hardy, remember Hardy, man, this is a kid that a lot of people thought could have been a first-round pick and had a very high grade, I believe, if I recall correctly, a top-five grade when it comes to the Blesto and the national reports in terms of heading into his senior season and injuries, character issues, subpar senior campaign caused him to slip. We thought he would slip, but he slipped even further than many of us believed, all the way to sixth round, 175th pick, but he seemed to do some things for them last year. But obviously, it does hurt when that first pick at the top is a quarterback and it doesn't really pan out, and that was the case with Jimmy Clausen going in the second round out of Notre Dame. Overall, in the past 5 years, taking a step back and a little bit of a wider look at what Carolina has done, they've done a pretty good job when they do have first-round picks. Now, the last 2 years, they haven't had first-round picks, so they went with Jimmy Clausen, 48th overall. In 2009, it was Everett Brown out of Florida State, 43rd overall, another kid who slipped. But their last four first-round picks, Jonathan Stewart, number 13, Jeffrey Ota, who obviously suffered the injury last year, so He didn't get a chance to kind of build on a solid rookie year. He went 19th overall. Both of those picks look pretty good. John Beeson, obviously a beast of a linebacker, unbelievable, great pick with the 25th overall in 2007, dropped to the end of the first round. And D'Angelo Williams has been a very productive player for Carolina. They snagged him with the 27th pick of the 2006 NFL draft, and he's one of those pending free agents. All those guys, we have them rated as busts, as was James Anderson, linebacker, taken in the third round, had a big season last year, over 100 tackles. Khalil, the center, Ryan Khalil, was a second-round pick in 2007. Charles Johnson rounded out that 2007 draft in the third-round, defensive out of Georgia, broke out as a big sack player last season. So first, second, and third round in 2007 really worked out well for them. Charles Godfrey was another good pickup in 2008, strong safety, and his kind of tandem man, his partner in crime, Sherrod Martin at free safety, was a nice pickup in the 2009 second round. Now, obviously, to get to 2-14, you got to have some bust mixed in there, and a couple of guys that really didn't pan out for them, Dwayne Jarrett, second round pick in 2007. Gary, you know, some guys, this is kind of debatable. We've had some internal debate, fourth, fifth-round picks. But Dan Connor was a third-round pick in 2008. They really hasn't done much. Same could be said for Corby Irvin out of Georgia, 2008, third-round pick, really hasn't done much. Duke Robinson, fifth-round pick in 2009, another big-name player that slipped there and hasn't really been able to pan out. Now, looking forward and what they might do, and in free agency, some key guys that they have there, really their top performers on most levels are due to be free agents. We're talking about guys like Thomas Davis at linebacker, Charles Johnson at defensive end, Richard Marshall at the corner position. On the offensive side of the ball, you got Ryan Khalil, who we mentioned, one of those boom picks, as well as D'Angelo Williams, another boom pick in the first round. And then quarterback Matt Moore, they got to make a decision on him and how he fits into the picture. Now, this year, they do have a first-round pick, and it is number one overall. It is the top selection, so it was a good year to make sure they kept that first-round pick. But they do not have a second-round pick. Overall, they have five picks. They have the 65th pick in the third round, as well as selections in the fourth, fifth, and sixth. So as of right now, no seventh-round pick for the Carolina Panthers. And, you know, as to be expected, a team that was 2-14 and owns the first overall pick, they have quite a few team needs, and it starts at the top with the quarterback position. Big need there. You know, last year they went with a few different guys, including Jimmy Clausen, who was their second-round pick and their highest pick in last year's draft. Also, you have Matt Moore, who we spoke about. You have guys like Brian St-Pierre, Keith Null. It doesn't appear that any of these guys are really considered to be legitimate long-term answers for the Panthers at the quarterback position. So this is why there's a, you know, intrigue in terms of Cam Newton. Can't wait to ask Darren Gant what he thinks about Cam potentially going there number one. Wide receiver is another position of need. Even though they had those couple of guys like LaFell and Geddes produce last season, you still wonder, are they really, you know, going to be starting type guys, number two receivers? I don't know. Most likely, I think right now, if one of them, let's say if LaFell ends up as a legit number two and Geddes a legit number three, I think Carolina would be happy with that. You do have Steve Smith, but he's getting up there in years, and it sounds like he wants to escape from Carolina. So if that happens, they could be in the mix for a number one wide receiver. A.J. Green is out there. Some people could make the case that he is the top overall prospect in this draft. I'm not sure if Carolina is going in that direction. I still would be surprised if they go with him at number one. Tight end is another big need. Obviously, you know, you're never going to see a tight end go number one overall, certainly not in this draft. We may not even see a tight end go in the first round at all. Now, the two intriguing positions are defensive tackle and defensive end, since it appears they're sticking with that 4-3 defense, at least short term. And potentially long-term, as, you know, head coach Rivera was commenting on, new head coach Ron Rivera was commenting on, you know, with so many teams going in the 3-4 direction, that now all of a sudden, maybe, you know, there's a shortage of 3-4 talents and a plethora of 4-3 talents. you know, kind of makes sense. It's the ebb and flow of NFL and the copycat type of league. So if they do go defensive tackle or defensive end, the two obvious choices there are Nick Fairley or Daquan Bowers. Cornerback and offensive guard are two more positions of team need for the Panthers. Definitely not going guard. Patrick Peterson, I guess, is out there, but I think that would still be a big surprise if they went in that direction. And with us right now is our man from the Charlotte Observer, Mr. Darren Gant. Darren, thanks a lot for joining us today in our on-the-clock segment, Carolina Panthers.
Sure thing, Dan. How you doing?
Well, it's great to have you on. I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to this NFL draft. We got the scouting combine coming up next week. You're our first guest here on our first on-the-clock episode as we kick off this series, 32 shows for 32 teams. Darren, let me start with this. You know, 2008, Carolina went 12-4. Then 2009, they went 8-8. Last year, 2-14. How did we get here from being a 12-4 team to a 2-14 team in just 2 years?
Well, I think the first big step is quarterback play. I think that's the first thing you got to look at. I mean, in 2008, that's when Jake Delhomme was still a productive starter. You started seeing a few signs coming down the stretch that he was starting to become something other than the guy who led him to a lot of wins, you know, up until the Tommy John surgery in 2007. And I think as long as he was playing well, all the other ingredients that they value were still in place and still kicking. The offensive line was really strong that year. That was the Jeff Otah draft and the results thereof. You know, and you add Jonathan Stewart to an already pretty good running game in D'Angelo Williams. So I think, you know, all the ingredients were in place. And when you look at what happened in 2009, it began with Jake really disintegrating, you know, not just his elbow but his confidence. And I think, too, his legs. You know, I think as evidenced by some of what we saw from him in Cleveland, I think he may have just – reached the point where, you know, you can't necessarily count on him to start anymore. And I know a lot of people laugh when you hear that, but again, I've been covering this team for a long time, so I saw Jake Delhomme as a really productive guy for a long time. So, you know, I think, you know, that was the first step. And then going into last season, they were counting on Matt Moore continuing to play like the Matt Moore who lit it up in some Decembers when they were playing against some teams that didn't really have all that much to play for and didn't seem all that interested in playing against the Carolina Panthers. I think, you know, particularly early on, Matt Moore looked like a guy who was being game-planned against for the first time in his life, and he looked over his head, frankly. So, you know, I think when that went downhill, you know, in a hurry for him after two games, John Fox changed the entire outlook of the Carolina Panthers season when he pulled Matt Moore after two games and put Jimmy Clausen in there. And I'm still not sure what John Fox's motives were with that move, because playing any rookie is not necessarily – you know, his thing. So I just think, you know, you gotta wonder why he went that route. But the reality is, you know, when they pulled the plug on Matt Moore, that's when the season, you know, officially became a rebuilding project.
Hey Darren, there's a bunch of key guys are potential free agents for Carolina, and obviously with the uncertainty going in the off season, who knows how everything's going to shake out. But, you know, you wrote about they have a kind of a decision to make whether they're going to use that franchise or tag or not. One, do you think if they're going to use it? And if they do, are they leaning towards Charles Johnson, Ryan Khalil, or maybe keeping D'Angelo Williams? What direction do you think they'll go?
Well, not to cop out on you, but I do think it's going to be one of those three guys. And I think there's some different things at play. And I think, you know, any indication they might get on where the CBA is pointing would probably help them, too, because, you know, I think D'Angelo would be the cheapest of the three tags to apply under $10 million. You know, I think dropping $10 million for 1 year of Ryan Khalil, although, you know, given the Panthers' track record, I think no matter who they tag, you're going to see them try to do something, you know, at least to stretch it out a few years with any of them. I think Charles Johnson and Khalil are the two guys they feel like they can do long-term deals with. D'Angelo's in a different sort of situation. And I go back, you know, to a name a lot of people may have forgotten, but Deshaun Foster, you know, when he was coming up as a free agent, they put a transition tag on him and then really quickly got a three-year extension done. And I think when you think about D'Angelo going into his year 28 season, I just think it's a little bit unlikely to see them go 4-5, 6-year deal with him just because he's nearing that point, especially with all the mileage he's got on him from his debut in Memphis. He's nearing that point where a long-term deal is a little bit of a risky bet.
All right, Darren, we're talking to Darren Gander, the Charlotte Observer. You can check out his Inside the Panthers blog on the Charlotte Observer website. Darren, let's hop on the draft here. This is On the Clock show. And I read online where you wrote that you felt they were kind of locked in on Luck. Now, when Luck decided to go back to school, how shocked and devastated was the franchise from Carolina about that?
Extremely on both counts. I think shocked, disappointed would be a good word, frustrated. You know, nothing against the kid. He was doing what's right for him. And you know, to me, my hat's off to Andrew Luck for making a decision and having his priorities in order. He wanted an education, and he's putting his money where his mouth is, you know, and leaving a lot of money on the table. So my hat's off to Andrew Luck at a personal level. But the Panthers were just, I mean, the entire plan was built around that pick. I mean, I think even in terms of some of the coaches they hired and some of the moves that they were plotting even before they hired Ron Rivera, you know, they were geared up to push the button on Andrew Luck, you know, and not think twice about it. I think if you look at what the Panthers have done over the years, you know, I think the biggest signal is when Jerry Richardson, the owner, said they weren't going to trade the pick. Well, Marty Herring loves trading draft picks. I mean, it's what he lives for. You know, he kind of laughs and describes it as part of the fun of his job. Well, you know, Mr. Richardson sat there in a press conference in early January. He said, nope, not trading that pick. You know, he was locked in on Luck. And, you know, that was going to be the payback for going 2-14, was that they were finally going to have that quarterback that they needed to compete in the NFC South with guys like Matt Ryan, Josh Freeman, Drew Brees. So, you know, they needed it. They wanted it. They were locked in on him. And now I think it really throws everything into the blender, because I just think from talking to some people around the building and just talking to other people around the league, I think you'd have a hard time selling any of these quarterbacks in this draft as a number one pick. You know, when you think of a guy like Sam Bradford, who you can push the button on day one and let him go, you know, I don't think Cam Newton's that kind of quarterback. I don't think Blaine Gabbert's that kind of quarterback. And, you know, I certainly don't think that Ryan Mallett, Jake Locker is that kind of quarterback either. So I just think it would be a stretch for them to use a quarterback or use the number one pick on a quarterback at this point. So, you know, we'll see which way they go. And I still think, again, given the wide-open nature of the number one slot this year, I think a trade is still definitely a possibility. I mean, particularly if we go to the combine next week and, you know, Blaine Gabbert really shows out or Newton really shows out and somebody falls in love with him, I think – if they could get a couple of teams interested in one of those quarterbacks, you know, then Marty Herney's phone might start ringing again, and that's probably what he'd prefer.
Hey, Darren, you're doing a knockout job, because I think you answered about my next two or three questions with that one answer. And it really is amazing. I mean, I joked once after Luck made his decision, it felt like Carolina was now 2-15. They just couldn't stop losing because the one clear-cut franchise quarterback decides to go back to school. But it was interesting when I was checking out one of your blogs when you were commenting on Newton, it was amazing the fan interest and the fans' comments going back and forth on Cam Newton. It seems like there is some hunger there for a young quarterback from the fan base. Does this mean we're completely giving up on Jimmy Clausen then?
I tell you what, the fan base might, Marty Herney has not. And again, I think he's the one thing you got to keep an eye on with all the moves he made and some of the coaches he hired. I mean, listen, Mike Shula was hired specifically to try to save Jimmy Clausen. I mean, they can spin it however they want, but that's his charter walking in the door as a new quarterback coach here, is to try to get something out of him. I mean, if you made me bet my money on it at the moment, my suspicion is that they're more likely – to go out and find some degree of veteran quarterback. I mean, you know, whether it's a McNabb or a Bulger or a Billy Volek, although I don't necessarily think it's going to be Volek, I think somebody out of that group is what they need to do. I mean, they need to get somebody in here who could be a short-term starter while they try to get Jimmy Clausen's feet back underneath him. I mean, Herney still believes in the guy deeply and, you know, frankly has a vested interest in Jimmy Clausen being a good NFL quarterback because, you know, when he made that pick last year, they never really envisioned having to play Jimmy as a rookie. I don't think, you know, they wanted that. You know, certainly their intent was for Matt Moore to be the guy and move forward. So it's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out, but I do think they certainly – you know, have a desire to try to get something out of Jimmy, and maybe him not playing this year would be the best way to do that.
Yeah, I think everything you said there makes sense. I'll be being honest, I wasn't the biggest Jimmy Clausen fan coming out, but I think it's unfair to judge the kid just on 1 year, particularly with the circumstances that he was thrown into. Now, let's say they do stay at number one. They don't go the quarterback way. I agree with you 1,000%. I think Cam Newton is a potential disaster going at number one overall. Do you think we would most likely go defensive line? Do you think most likely we'd go Bowers, or would it be Fairley?
Well, I don't think it's a slam dunk either way at the moment, and some other moves could dictate that. I mean, I think, you know, if they can get Charles Johnson locked up to a long-term contract, then you come back and you've got a Greg Hardy, you've got an Everett Brown, you know, two guys who've showed some flash as pass rushers, you know, and certainly Charles came into his own last year. If you can keep those three guys together, then I don't know that you necessarily have the need for a Daquan Bowers. I don't think he's a home run in the way Julius Peppers was walking in the door as a double-digit sack guy. I mean, I don't get that impression, you know, from talking to people. Even though the kid's got a world of potential, I don't know that anybody perceives him being a Peppers, Mario Williams type pass rusher right out of the chute. I think Nick Fairley, I mean, gosh, since the national championship game, I mean, and I had the opportunity to see him a few other times this year, you know, he might have been a one-year wonder, but he was really good in that 1 year. And I think when you look at the Carolina Panthers roster, that's a big black hole. I mean, Derek Landry, for goodness sakes, was the best defensive tackle on the roster last year. And, you know, I think even his most ardent supporters here would tell you they'd probably rather have him in a third or fourth tackle role. So, you know, obviously defensive tackle, I think, even with all their problems at quarterback, I think defensive tackle is the biggest need position on the roster. So, to me, Fairley probably makes the most sense. But at the same time, I mean, I've been covering these guys for a long time and know how they operate. They're going to go through this process. They're going to listen to every phone that rings. And, I mean, I think they're going to think about trading down. And I think, you know, Bowers is a possibility. Fairley is a possibility. I think A.J. Green's a possibility, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, there are people who think he is that Calvin Johnson level, you know, Larry Fitzgerald level receiver who's going to be a big-time player for a long time. Now, did they draft three receivers last year? Yeah, but they got kind of limited production out of the group of them. I think Geddes and LaFell each had their moments. And, you know, Armani Edwards is a project, and they knew that going in. So they haven't given up on him by any stretch. So, I mean, I think, you know, especially with a lot of people uncertain about Steve Smith's future and how long he wants to be here, I think A.J. Green's a guy they're going to look at too.
Interesting. We're definitely on the same wavelength. Nick Fairley is my guy. I think he's the number one guy on the board. And if you got the best pick, I think you take the best player. And if he fills a big need, hey, even better. So it appears Carolina, you know, at this point could definitely go in a lot of directions. I know it's hard to pinpoint down one, but, you know, if I had to make you make a prediction, April 28th, are they going to call Cam Newton, Nick Fairley, Bowers? Are they going to make a trade? What, if I had to pin you down today, what would you tell me?
Well, just based on the percentages, I would probably, you know, bet that they would try to get some kind of trade worked up. I mean, Marty Herney's done 13 draft day trades in the last 9 drafts since he's been in charge. And it's just something he believes in, and especially given the fact that they lack a second-round pick. You know, they'll have a couple of thirds, but they do lack a second and would like to try to get back into the second round if they could. So I think, you know, if somebody, like I said earlier, if somebody falls in love or a couple of people fall in love with Gabbert or Newton or even Green as the number one pick, you know, they're going to wave that thing around over their heads and say, all right, here it is. Who's got something for me? So, you know, I think if they had an opportunity to trade down, that would probably be the preference. Because let's be honest, I mean, you know, I think, you know, even though I think a lot, and I know you do about Nick Fairley, you know, I don't think it's unrealistic to think if you're picking fourth that Nick Fairley could be there. I mean, if you sure. if things stack up that somebody wants a quarterback first and trades with the Carolina Panthers, and then maybe, you know, as John Fox in Denver's trying to put together a 4-3 defense, maybe he wants Bowers to be his Peppers. You know, and then you get into the third spot, and I think most people think Buffalo's leaning quarterback, so maybe the other quarterback goes off the board and bang, all of a sudden there's Nick Fairley sitting there fourth, or your pick with A.J. Green. So I think there are a lot of scenarios in play, and I think they'll look at absolutely every one of them. But I do think if they could do a trade, I think that would probably be their preference at the moment.
Well, let me ask you this, Darren. Could the new economics play a role in where they go, and if there is already slotting put into place – so you would not have to give, let's say, a Cam Newton a, you know, $40, $50 million guaranteed contract. He's not going to get that bonus baby contract like Bradford and others have gotten. Would that make me more likely to select the quarterback and roll the dice?
Well, I think, you know, you could also look at it from the other side. I think it makes it more valuable as a trade commodity. I mean, if somebody – you know, if somebody's thinking about drafting a quarterback, the idea that they don't have to give him that big $50 million guaranteed Sam Bradford deal, you know, I think that makes it valuable real estate. So I think it could go either way, but, you know, there's a temptation there certainly. But, boy, I mean, and again, I don't want to suggest that Cam Newton's absolutely going to be a bust. I think the guy's got an opportunity to be pretty good, especially in the kind of offense they're running or want to run, which is a downfield passing game, you know, Don Coryell-type system. And I think he's got the arm strength to do that. I think given some of his accuracy issues, trying to drop him into a West Coast system is where it gets risky. So, yeah, I don't know. It's still very early, and there's still a lot to be seen. But, you know, I just think you're going to – given the fact that it's a quarterback, given the fact that it could be price-controlled – you know, I think you got to look long and hard at pulling the trigger on.
And we're talking to Darren Gann of the Charlotte Observer. Darren, you have a couple more minutes for one or two more questions?
Yeah, a couple more.
All right, I got two more for you. What you brought up Steve Smith earlier, and that could definitely open the door for a bigger need for an A.J. Green. Do you think Steve Smith will be a Carolina Panther in 2011?
I think it might depend on the CBA. I mean, to be honest with you, if there's a CBA in a couple of weeks, certainly before the draft, I think, you know, if Steve expressed, and let's just get this clear right off the bat, I mean, Steve has not said, I want out. He has gone to great lengths to not say that. So, you know, I think we're speculating a little bit here, but I do think it's reasonable to suggest that, you know, 32-year-old wide receiver, you know, certainly I think he's got some good years left in him, but if he decides he wants to be someplace else and they've got an opportunity to parlay him into some draft picks, you know, I think there's a chance at a deal. But if CBA drags out and it's Labor Day and they're still talking about a deal, then I think it's most likely that Steve's going to be here simply because – you know, they're going to want some kind of compensation for him in the short term. And you know, 2012 draft picks aren't as interesting to them in September as Steve Smith would be. So, you know, I think if it drags out, you know, that kind of increases the chances he's here this year.
And going from somebody who's maybe being careful with their words to somebody who is letting it all out when they speak, and that's the owner, Jerry Richardson. And I read your column about how the owners have his back. How do you think that plays with both the city of Charlotte as well as the players on the Panthers?
Well, Jerry Richardson has been more popular in Charlotte than he is at the moment. I mean, last year's strategy, I mean, basically, you know, even though I think if you take away Julius Peppers, and that's kind of a different situation, if you look at all the rest of the guys they jettisoned, you know, in what was described as a purge, not a whole lot of those guys had a lot of success last year. Probably Chris Harris is the only one in Chicago who had any measure of success. So I think, you know, they used uncapped years to get out of jail free card, and they did it for a specific reason, so they'd have clear books going into the next CBA. You know, and again, when they were trying to sign a Khalil, a Johnson, a D'Angelo, Thomas Davis to long-term deals. So, you know, they did it for a reason. It wasn't a popular reason here in town, especially when the team goes 2-14. So couple that with, you know, what he may or may not have said to Peyton Manning, and to be honest with you, the best account we've heard of that conversation came from somebody who wasn't even in the room. So, you know, I think there's still probably a good bit of speculation going on as to what the tone actually was. But, you know, hey, let's be honest. Jerry Richardson is a direct man. When he is challenged, he can get a little salty. He will swear when he is feeling it. And I think a lot of people who work for him have heard that over the years. So, you know, it's reasonable to believe that he might have got a little hot under the collar. I don't know that it would affect, you know, in terms, and I've been asked this question locally, you know, will it affect free agents thinking about coming to Carolina in the future? I mean, let's be honest, free agents go where the money is. I mean, they volunteer to go to Oakland year in and year out. And I think Al Davis, in terms of crazy owners, probably got quite a bit of a head start on Jerry Richardson at the moment. So, you know, I don't know that it's going to have any kind of long-term impact. You know, I just think, to me, the real illustration is the fact that we're talking so much about Jerry Richardson's attitude tells me that up until today when they agreed to go to mediation that not a lot was happening with the CBA, because if there was actual progress being made, we'd have been talking about that instead of whether, you know, the meanie pants owner of the Carolina Panthers hurt a few guys' feelings.
Yeah, I think it's great to have a couple salty owners. You need a couple of salty owners out there to mix things up, and you're right. I think there is a little bit of searching for news when there isn't a lot of news going on. Darren Gann of the Charlotte Observer. Darren, thanks a lot for joining us. You can check him out on the Charlotte Observer website. You got the Inside the Panthers blog. You can follow him on Twitter at @DarinGannTT, where you can learn about his thoughts on football. And today I learned, like myself, you grew up as a Public Enemy and NWA fan.
Yeah, when the Waka Flocka shooting came down in Charlotte, I had to go to the research department because I have no idea who that is. And frankly, I still don't.
Yeah, that's when you start feeling old. All right, Darren, thanks a lot for giving us some
time. You got it, Dan.
All right, as I said, Darren Gann of the Charlotte Observer, great spot there, answered a bunch of questions we had with the Panthers and kind of the direction the franchise is going in. We have a question here on our blog here. If the Panthers will trade the first pick for Albert Haynesworth and some purple drink. Somehow I don't think so. They may get another player in some purple drink, but I don't think they're going to go the Albert Haynesworth direction trading that pick. Although from talking to Darren, I think trading seems like something they definitely want to do, and I think to some extent makes a lot of sense for them. They have a bunch of needs. Why not trade that pick, even if it's only a couple spots, get some extra picks in the process, and you could still end up snagging one of the one or two top guys in a Nick Fairley, in an A.J. Green, and still filling in a huge, huge need. I mean, you know, he sounds like he's a little higher on Cam Newton than I am, per se. I think it's a really risky pick to take him as a top five guy, to be honest. We didn't even get into a lot of issues why, but, you know, there are the off-the-field issues. There are the issues, I think, on the field. You know, does he have the strong arm to get it downfield? I think overall, for the most part, he does. But I still have questions in terms of can he do that consistently and successfully on the NFL level. Sure, that type of system maybe looks like it's better for Cam than a West Coast-type offense, but my questions are how well does he read safeties, particularly, you know, at the college level, most of these DBs are more worried about Cam Newton as a runner than Cam Newton as a passer. He's not going to be successful that way at the NFL level. He's going to have to be a passer first to be successful as a pro quarterback. So once those safeties are played deeper, the coverages are disguised better than they are at the college level, the speed of the game is faster, even faster than the SEC. I know that's the fastest conference in college football, but it's still not the NFL. The safeties get there, and I just don't see him anticipating well. You know, the touchdown passes he threw in that championship game, the first one, the receiver was completely facing him. You could see the receiver's number facing Cam. It was like they were playing catch in the backyard. That's not going to happen in the NFL. I rarely see Cam anticipate throwing to an open spot where his receiver is going to get to. That's something he's got to be able to do. in addition to reading the secondary. And his mechanics to me sometimes are inconsistent, which causes some of those passes to float. Sure, he's got the ability to throw it downfield, but I think too often he floats them in there, and I think, you know, sometimes the rather than getting there as quickly as it can, it hangs in the air and it gives the defense time to go. We have another question through the chat room, and with Sue having a big year, are they going to play it safe with a defensive tackle? That would be Nick Fairley. I think so. I think if they stay at number one, I think that's what they're going to do. But they could trade down. I think that's the safest pick. I think he's got great upside, and I think, you know, it would make sense at many levels, you know, better than taking a quarterback, better than taking a shot. The Kwon Bowers thing, I tend to agree with what he said. I don't see Bowers as a Julius Peppers-type freaky athlete, although he has a little freak in him. You know, with his size, he's a bigger than Peppers, a little different than Peppers, maybe not as big of an impact pass rusher off the bat, but I think he might be a better run defender off the bat than Peppers was because of his strength, his ability to play with leverage and engage with blockers and disengage and make plays against the run. So he's a little bit different kind of freaky athlete than a Julius Peppers was. But to answer that question, I think if they stay at number one, Nick Fairley is the favorite to go there. A.J. Green's an intriguing guy, but I think, once again, he makes a little more sense if they're able to trade down one or two spots. I would love to throw a couple more guys at you at different positions that they could go in the second round, but they don't have that second round pick. Just the 65th pick overall is the next one in the third round. So they only have two picks in the top two, number one, number 65, and they definitely have a ways to go. That could be another additional reason to trade down that number one pick. The fact that they don't have a second round pick, you know, maybe you could recoup that by trading down 3, 4, 5 spots in that and still staying in the top 10. Interesting with Luck. And like I said, sometimes it seems like they went 2-15 by having Andrew Luck go back. I mean, people can rave about Cam Newton. People can rave about Blaine Gabbert. But there's no way in the world either one would be considered to be the number one overall guy, number one overall quarterback if Andrew Luck was here. There's no doubt about it. This kid is a once in every 10, 15 years type of prospect, probably the best quarterback prospect since Peyton Manning came into the league. Luck is that good. He's going to be that good. So I think that was a big loss, no matter what happens with Carolina. In terms of free agency, still kind of up in the air what they're going to do with the pick. And obviously the economics playing a big role. As you said, in a weird way, you wouldn't think it at first that D'Angelo Williams, if he was franchised, would end up being the cheapest. But what happens is with the offensive linemen, they all get lumped in together. So Ryan Khalil, a center, benefits from the big salaries that the offensive tackles make. And I think obviously depending on when things shake out, it'll be interesting to see, does free agency impact draft needs, or is this the first year that who you draft impacts what you do in free agency? So obviously where they go there, if they take a Bowers or don't take a Bowers, suddenly that impacts how important it is to keep a Charles Johnson. As Darren mentioned, and we talked about Hardy, we talked about Everett Brown, if you add a Bowers, now suddenly it almost doesn't make sense to use that kind of money on a Charles Johnson. But ultimately, quarterback is the big thing. That's kind of how they got from 12-4. Are they going to 2-14 in just 2 years? Can they correct that position? It looks like it's going to be really tough to do that right now. It looks like it's going to be really tough for them to fix the quarterback position today. All right, folks, I just want to remind everybody to check out the relaunch at NFLDraftBible.com. We should have that ready for you before the combine. On the clock continues next week. We have four new shows next weekend, next week, Monday through Thursday, as we take you through picks 2 through 5. Check out the On the Clock series. Go to NFLDraftBible.com right now. You can click on our NFL Draft Bible On the Clock series to check out the schedule. We have 1 through 32 teams. We will take you through early April, covering each team on the clock with guests like Darren Gant today. On Monday, it will be the Denver Broncos, followed by Buffalo Bills, the Cincinnati Bengals on Wednesday, and then the Arizona Cardinals back here on Thursday at 6:30. keep a lookout for what guests we may have. I also want to let you know about the NFL Draft Digest weekly show, which I host. Have you ever eaten something that makes your stomach turn? Well, here's something for you to digest. It is the Draft Digest Weekly, right here, presented by NFL Draft Bible Live, each and every Thursday on the Fantasy Sports Channel from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. If you want the skinny on all the NFL Draft prospects coming out for the draft, and not just the household names, but if you want to get deep into the draft and let the Draft Digest Weekly, presented by NFL Draft Bible, take you there with on-location coverage as we track their path to the draft. As always, taking your questions live in our interactive chat room like we did today. And if you want to get on the action, don't forget to call in. The number is 347-945-6275. You can write that right now. Have it ready for next Thursday at 5 o'clock, where you can hear us on the Fantasy Sports Channel. Folks, tune in next Monday to the On the Clock. I believe Mr. Joe Everett will be hosting that episode. I will be with you next Thursday for both the NFL Draft Digest and our On the Clock with the Arizona Cardinals.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!